Welcome to the Next Level Soul Podcast, where we ask the big questions about life. Why are we here? Is this all there is? What is my soul's mission? We attempt to answer those questions and more by bringing you raw and inspiring conversations with some of the most fascinating and thought-provoking guests on the planet today. I am your host, Alex Ferrari. I'm always looking to help the Next Level Soul audience take their soul to the next level. And I've been able to partner with Mind Valley to present you guys with a ton of free masterclasses between 60 and 90 minutes covering mind, body, soul, relationships, and conscious entrepreneurship. Some of these masterclasses are taught by spiritual masters, relationship experts, best-selling authors, legends in the personal growth and spirituality space, and so much more. So if you want to sign up for any of our free mind, body, and soul masterclasses, just head over to nextlevelsoul.com/free. Have you ever wanted to ask your spirit guide a specific question face to face? Well, today's guest did just that. We have on the show Garnett Schulhauser, who practiced corporate law for over 30 years with two blue chip company law firms. And then he met this man named Albert on the street, and it changed his life. His conversations with Albert spawned 5 books and thousands of conversations over the years. And Garnett and I had a wonderful conversation, so I can't wait for you to hear it. Let's dive in. I'd like to welcome to the show, Garnett Schulhauser. How you doing, Garnett?
Good, thank you. How about you, Alec?
I'm doing very good, my friend. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I truly appreciate it. I'm looking forward to our conversation. So my first question, sir, is what was your life like prior to your spiritual awakening?
Well, I was a corporate lawyer. I was a typical arrogant, condescending, stuffed shirt corporate lawyer. Mm-hmm. I had rejected religion. I was raised as a Roman Catholic, but I had rejected that a long time ago. So I was searching for a new paradigm, something to latch onto. And I was constantly asking myself the eternal questions of life, like who am I? Why am I here? What happens to me when I die? And so then all my questions were answered when I encountered my spirit guide, Albert.
And tell me about Albert.
Well, how I met him was he accosted me on the street. I was walking down the street one day, and he jumped out, and there was a homeless man jumped out in front of me. He looked like a typical homeless man, you know, stringy hair, scraggly beard, dirty slept-in clothes. But I didn't go around him because he had these amazing, dazzling, sparkling blue eyes that shone like two little blue stars. And his eyes were sending me this wave of pure, unconditional love that just basically infused my whole body with an amazing sense of peace, security, and well-being. It was like I never felt that good before in my life. It was just an amazing feeling. So I was like a deer caught in the headlights. I don't know how long I stood there. Then he broke the spell by saying, "Why are you here?" And then he disappeared into a nearby store. And so when I collected my wits finally, I went into the store to try to find him, but he was nowhere to be seen. I walked back out in the street, walked up and down for several blocks trying to find him, but he had disappeared into thin air. So that night I resolved I had to go back to that same street the next day to see if I could find him. Wanted to know who he was and why did he stop me. So went back to the same street, same time of day, hoping to find him. After searching for about 15 minutes, I finally spotted him sitting all alone on a bench. So I went up to him and I said, "Who are you and why did you stop me the other day?" And he said, "I'm a soul just like you. I'm here to help you on your journey and answer your questions." And then my skeptical lawyer brain kicked in. And I said, "Why do you think you can help me when you can't even help yourself? Because it looks like you've been sleeping on the street for weeks and you smell like a dead fish." Well, he gave me a big smile and said, "Looks can be deceiving because you look like you're a successful corporate lawyer with everything under control, but we both know that's just a facade." He said, "If you want to, turn around and go back to your office and see if you can find all those answers you've been seeking all these years on all those emails from your clients waiting for you on your computer." Well, my intuition was screaming at me that I had to sit down and chat with him. I mean, what did I have to lose? Half an hour of my day. So I sat down on the bench. We began a dialogue. He said his name was Albert and he was one of my spirit guides in disguise. So that's how I met Albert.
And now, can you explain to the audience what a spirit guide is?
Well, spirit guides are basically like our coaches in the spirit realm. Every one of us has several, you know, two, three, some have more than that. Spirit guides, they're our celestial coaches. They signed on to that job before we incarnated. And they're there to try to help us steer us on the right course. The right course being the one we had planned for ourselves before we incarnated, when we developed our life plans. So they know what's in our life plans. We don't know what's in it. So they try to send us subtle messages to steer us on the right course, especially when you come to a fork in the road. You have to decide, do I go take the left fork or the right fork? They're going to be blasting everyone with messages to say, this is the one you should take. You should take the left one, or you should take the right one, whatever. The trouble is that their messages are very subtle. It's like flashes of intuition, gut feelings, coincidental events, that kind of thing. So most people don't even know they're getting the messages, or if they get them, they don't know where they're coming from. So that's why life on Earth is so difficult. But they're always there with us, and they're always trying to help us have a better journey on Earth. So that's who spirit guides are. They're like our life coaches.
So how do you, is there any techniques that you know of that can help our sensitivities to hear or understand these messages easier than we can?
Yes, meditation. It's important. If you sit quietly in a room, meditate, try to unclutter your mind from all the other thoughts that are churning through. You know, we all have a lot of thoughts churning through our minds every day. Try to quiet our minds. Then the messages from our guides will start to come through much more vividly, and we'll be able to understand them more, and hopefully then be able to act on them. So there's no magic way. It'd be nice if I could just give everyone a phone number to say, call this and you'll get your spirit guide online. That doesn't work that way. So it's really a struggle for people to hear the messages. But meditation is really the best way to do it. No, I didn't meditate with Albert. He came into my life because he wanted me to have direct contact so I could write about what he told me in my books. And so that's why I have the direct contact. But for most people, it doesn't happen.
Right. So because normally, from what I understand, spirit guides, I work in the background. They never incarnate. They never show up in a physical form. So that's why your story was so interesting to me.
Yeah, most people aren't aware that they have spirit guides, excuse me, but they're there, and they're there 24/7. They never leave us. They're always sending us messages, and they're like, they want us to have the best journey possible. And they get frustrated when people don't hear their messages or don't act on them. See, what happens a lot of times, you get a message from your guide. It may come as a flash of intuition, a feeling that says, I should do this. Your human mind has its own agenda. It doesn't know what your soul has planned or what the spirit guides want you to do. So there's a conflict all the time. You know, like, it comes to the fork in the road. Your guides may say, take the left fork, and human mind is saying, no, take the right fork. So you have this constant battle. And obviously, your human mind doesn't know what's best for you. It just thinks that it does.
Now, I have to ask you, when you had this revelation, when you met Albert and your life changed, I have to believe that there must have been some transitional issues, meaning that your old life, your old friends, your old, you know, your family. What was that like on a psychological standpoint of dealing with leaving everything that you've known behind to go walk down this new path because you've obviously been shown something? What was that like for yourself?
Well, it was a struggle. It was a major transformation. And after I met Albert, I didn't tell anyone, not even my wife, that I had met my spirit guide. And then when I started, and when he said I should write a book about what he had told me, I was a bit taken aback because I had never dreamed of writing a book. But anyway, gently persuasive, he got me to write the manuscript for my first book. And then when I finished it, I had a decision point, like, should I throw it in the drawer never to be seen again, or should it get published? Because I knew that if I got it published, my former law partners, clients, other colleagues, some of them would think I'd gone crazy. Right. And so there was a risk there that I could lose a lot of my old friends. And nobody likes to be labeled as being crazy or senile or whatever. So I had to struggle with that. Finally, I just said to heck, I'm going to let the chips fall where they may. I'm going to get it published. And I'll recognize I'll lose some people. And I did. There's a lot of my former friends who don't talk to me. They don't say to my face that they think I'm crazy, but I know they're thinking that. But that's just the way it is. But the good news is that I made a whole lot more new spiritually enlightened people, friends. And so the overall has been a very positive positive change for me. But I struggled with it because I thought, you know, do I really want to have my old law partners think I'm crazy? Not really, but you have to move on, you know. And so the transformation has been amazing. I've never looked back, never regretted it. And so I just charge along. And so after the first book, wrote four more, and here I am at book five, finished.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
Now, the thing is, a lot of times when you hear stories like this, it's, you know, people who have, you know, nothing, or their life is not going well, and they find enlightenment in this way, and they try to, you know, put this message out, but they're financially not in a great place. But it sounds to me that you were in the physical world in a good place. Financially, you were probably doing very well. You had a successful career. On the outside, everything looked like you had everything that we're told that we're supposed to have, especially here in the West. But inside, you were dying for more, looking for more. So that's what I find so fascinating about your story as well, is that you had, for lack of a better word, everything that you really, you checked all the boxes, basically, that in life, your successful career, married, you know, money, all these external things, but internally you were dying inside. And a lot of people listening, they're like, oh, this, this doesn't sound right, or this is all made up. I'm like, what makes your story interesting is that you gave up a lot of, like we just talked about, a lot of these physical, things that you have accumulated over your life, your career, your money, your reputation, all that was risked for getting this message out into the world, which is very admirable, to say the least.
Thank you. Yeah, no, it was a risk, and I did have to pay some of the price for that. But I was successful, so I had my career had been built up, and so I was financially fine. A year after I met Albert, I just retired from the law because it didn't make any sense to me anymore. It was irrelevant, you know. So I just retired and started writing my books. But there's no move that you make that doesn't have some risk associated with it. In this case, it was a fairly big risk, from going from a successful corporate lawyer to being a new author trying to write books and find my way in the spiritual world. So it was a bit of a struggle, but it absolutely was worth it. And I'm just a much better person. Before, I was a type A, stressed out lawyer. Now I don't have nearly the same stress, and I understand who I am, where I'm going, and what I should be doing with the rest of my life. So it's very comforting at this stage of my life.
What was one of the biggest revelations that you learned from Albert?
Well, the biggest revelation is that we're all eternal souls. A lot of people already know that. But we came here not because somebody put us here. It wasn't God or the universe saying, okay, Garnet, you're having this life on Earth. We chose it. I chose my life. You chose your life. We don't remember that, but we did. Through our life plan, we pick out the place we're going to be born, our names, identity of our parents, siblings, and other relatives. And so we came here to learn and experience things. And so when you look in the mirror in the morning, excuse me, and say, who am I and why am I here? The answer is, you're an eternal soul and you came here by your own choice. Nobody made you come here. So if you don't like what's going on in your life, or say, who put me here? You put yourself here. So that's a real big acknowledgement. The other thing was that, in a lot of religions, God is sort of the person who's manipulating things, making things happen or not happen. So people say, I'll pray to God because I want to pass my final exam or get over my disease or whatever the heck it is. But the God or the source does not manipulate things. So they don't change things and they don't make rules. And so, you know, I was raised as a Roman Catholic. There was all kinds of rules that I was taught that we had to follow. If not, we'd go to hell. Well, God doesn't make rules, and there's no judgment or punishment in the afterlife. So no matter what you've done, everyone goes back to the spirit side. So there's no hell, no punishment, no judgment. So that's a huge difference from what I was raised with in terms of, and a lot of religions are that way, the Christian religion and the Muslim and Jewish religion, same thing. You know, you have to be a good guy or you're going to go and suffer punishment in the afterlife. Well, that doesn't happen. So that's like a game changer. It's like, you know, and my spirit guide always tells me, it doesn't matter how many times you go off course or how many mistakes you make, you're always going to go back to the spirit side. Then you can regroup and decide, do I want to incarnate on planet Earth again, or do I want to go somewhere else? Or do I just want to stay on the spirit side and enjoy the blissful joyfulness of the spirit side, which religions would call heaven, but I like to call it spirit side.
Now, why do so many of the religions in the world, you know, come up with the idea of that we have one life and only one life, and we have to live that good life, and at the end of that life, you're done, and it's all there is. And there's no talk of reincarnating, or, I mean, some very famous, you know, obviously Hinduism and Buddhism, things like that, talk about it. But many, many religions don't talk about that. Why is that, in your opinion?
Well, it's our way of holding our feet to the fire. Because if they say you can reincarnate as many times as you want, so then you can say, well, okay, if I don't feel like following the rules in this life, it doesn't matter because I'll come back and have another chance. They want to get rid of that second chance. They want to say you have one life. You better be good or else you can go to hell forever. So that's their way of keeping the pressure on everyone in this life because you only have one shot. In reality, is of course, that's wrong. You can reincarnate. They don't want you to know that. And that's why they reject the idea of reincarnation.
Even though some of the oldest religions, even older than Christianity, Judaism, Muslims as well, talk about reincarnation. I mean, Hinduism is much older.
Yes.
Buddhism is much older.
Well, apparently, from what I can understand, the early Christian religion at one point, before they sort of developed their policy against reincarnation, there was a movement within them to say that we should support reincarnation. Then they decided at the council to say, no, we're not going to do reincarnation. So it was a very conscious decision on their part to say no to reincarnation. So
it is what it is, as they say. Now, what does God want us to accomplish in our life?
What does God want us to accomplish? Nothing. God doesn't have any ideals or any purpose for us. We came here to accomplish what we wanted to accomplish. And so the source doesn't care what we do. The source is just a passive observer. So we put ourselves in these lives. We want to accomplish things. Our soul does. But God doesn't care what we do. And they don't care whether we're good or bad or different. There's no absolute right or wrong in terms of the source. Okay. So we have rights or wrongs that we set for ourselves through our souls, but the source doesn't get involved in that. Doesn't have any goals for us. Doesn't have any rules, and there's no judgment after we die. So the source is sort of a passive observer, which is really contrary to what most religions believe, which is that the source wants us to be good and wants us to do things that they put us on this earth for, but except the source did not put us here. We put ourselves here.
It's kind of like looking at life as a movie or a play. I mean, you would, you know, if someone's doing something good or bad, quote unquote, in a movie or play, you don't attach major importance to it because it's a play. We think of our life as not a play, as something extremely serious and important and things like that. So we don't have the same perspective as, let's say, the creator does.
No, and in fact, the souls on the spirit side who are watching what's going on, they have the right perspective. They do look at lives on Earth like a play. And so you're very right. I mean, if you're acting in a play in Broadway and the script calls for you to stab and kill another actor, when the curtain goes down, you don't get arrested for murder because it's just play acting. So the souls on the spirit side say, you know, you could be a real bad dude on Earth, but when you come back here, it's a totally different perspective, and you have a chance to regroup and go back and try to do better the next time. So that's how they view it, as like life on Earth is like a play. To us, it's very real. It's not like a play, but that's just our perspective.
Now, where did we come from prior to incarnating in the physical form? Like, where do our souls, our souls, where do they come from?
Well, they're on the spirit side. They were created, they spun out from the source. Various times there's new souls being created all the time. And when you spin out from the source, the idea is to go out and explore the universe, try to find what it's like to incarnate in physical life forms. Earth is just one of the places you can incarnate. There's billions of planets that have life forms you can incarnate there. A lot of us may have come from other planets before coming to Earth. Earth is one of the toughest schools. But so our true home is the spirit side, where we're beings of energy, very high vibration rate. And that's what our true home is. So, but you can't really understand what life is like as a human on earth until you incarnate into one. So it's like on the spirit side, you have book learning. When you incarnate, you have hands-on learning. Then you can really experience what's going on and what life is like as a human. That's just part of our evolution.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
Now, why would we want to leave the spirit side or heaven to come to earth? Like why would we want to leave bliss to come and feel pain and suffering?
Because it's just part of our growth and evolution. So we want to advance our souls. And in order to do that, you often have to incarnate into a physical form. So you incarnate into a human form, not an easy life. Earth is one of the toughest schools, but we do that with full knowledge of what we're getting into. And it's like a challenge, you know, it's sort of like, why do people want to climb Mount Everest? I mean, nobody's making them do that, but it's a challenge, personal challenge they want to do. Same with the souls and the spirit side. It's like, I know it's a tough life, but I'm up to it. I'm going to meet the challenge. I'm going to incarnate. And so that's how they think. And no one forces them to, but they also know it's a very brief adventure because there's no linear time on the spirit side. There's no past or future, just the present. So a lifetime of 80 years for a human on earth is just like the blink of an eye over there. So they just say, okay, well, I'll just take this brief jump into a human body. I'll be back before you know it and get on with things. So it's not a very troubling aspect for soul and spirit side to jump into a human body. I mean, when we're sitting here and you say, well, why are we here? And you can wonder, why would someone choose to be a blind beggar in Calcutta? It seems like awful. If you can choose where you want to go, why wouldn't you be, why wouldn't you be Prince Charles? And Albert says, you won't understand it as a human, but you had good reasons to choose the life you chose before you incarnated. And when you get back to the spirit side, after your physical body dies, all this will come together. You realize what you put in your life plan. You realize what you try to accomplish. You'll say, okay, how many of the boxes did I tick off? And if I didn't, there's some that are left unchecked. I can jump back in. I can reincarnate as many times as I want. And when I get tired of reincarnating, I could just stay on the spirit side. So it's not looked upon as being a big challenge to incarnate as a human on earth. It's just a sort of a brief adventure to the people on the spirit side. So that's why they do it.
Now, I've heard of something, a concept called soul groups. And we have similar souls that we travel with in packs, almost like our families, our friends, close people. And there's a handful of them that are constantly, you know, so one lifetime I would be the father, next one I might be the daughter or the son or the friend or the one that, you know, all that kind of stuff. What do you know? What did Albert say about that?
No, you got it exactly right, Alex. We travel in soul groups. We interchange positions, as you say. One time you're the father, next time you're the daughter. And we just keep on trading positions. And that's so that we get every aspect of a human life as possible. So you incarnate as both genders, a number of different positions. And a soul group is just a handy. It's like a theater troupe traveling around the country. It's sort of like, okay, you're going to take this role this time and I'll take this role. And then the next life will switch it around. So it's just a handy sort of family group where you can always find somebody to fill your role. So if you want to incarnate somewhere, you can say, okay, who wants to be my parents? Who wants to be my siblings? You know, and you always have volunteers within your soul group because they know that you will volunteer to be in their life. And so it's just a very handy arrangement.
It's kind of like a casting, like you're casting for parts in a play.
Exactly. That's exactly what it's like. It's like you just fill in different roles. And you decide one time you're going to be the hero, next time you're going to be the antagonist. I mean,
the villain.
We all
right.
Trade off these roles, yeah. And it's just, and so we all try to help each other in their soul group, help each other advance and learn lessons, face the challenges. So it's a cooperative effort.
It's so difficult for people to understand the concept of wanting to go through pain. So if in the concept that we just talked about in regards to soul groups. Let's say, you know, this lifetime, I'm going to incarnate as the father and I'm going to be a bastard. I'm going to be a drunk. I'm going to beat you. There's going to be a lot of trauma by me being who I am. The next life, I might be the mother or the father again. But this time I'm going to be the sweetest, nicest, most supporting person ever. Then since I maybe haven't experienced the other side of being a bastard, maybe then I will in the next lifetime become the daughter or the son who is then being oppressed and being tortured, not tortured, but traumatized by that parent, to again, feel it. But it's so difficult for us here to understand that because it's just our perspective, correct?
Yeah, exactly. But you nailed it perfectly. Is that, you know, sometime you're going to be one life, you might be the abusive father. You come back to the next life and say, okay, well, that was bad, but I want to experience what it's like to be abused. And so you come back as a child. So that happens a lot. And Dolores Cannon, I don't know if you know about Dolores Cannon, but she developed the QHHT program. Well, in one of her clients who was born, who was blind from birth, and she put her into the hypnosis session, and she found out that the reason that she was blind from birth was because in a previous life, she had been a cruel tyrant who liked to poke out the eyes of her prisoners.
Right.
And so she decided, okay, well, I'm going to go my next life and see what it's like to be blind, you know? So that those kinds of things happen all the time, but nobody makes you do that. If you feel like you're a cruel tyrant and you don't want to suffer the other side of it in a new life, you can clear off your karma in other ways by doing something very positive to people. So it doesn't have to be an eye for an eye. There's various ways of sort of balancing out your karma.
Right. And can you talk a little bit about karma? Because karma is something that it is so in the zeitgeist. You know, even my kids now are going instant karma, you know, when they say something and then something happens to them right away or something like that. Can you talk a little bit about karma? Because it is a much more accepted idea in today's world than it was even 20 years ago.
Well, karma is basically the old saying, what goes around comes around. But karma is a way of sort of measuring the good things versus the bad things you do in a life. Now, some religions think that if you create bad karma, you're trapped on the wheel of karma and you have no choice. You have to keep on coming back. Like for some of the Eastern religions, if you're a bad dude, the next life you come back as a snake. You know, that's right. Not true, because you always have the choice. No matter how much bad karma you have accumulated, you have a choice when you're on the spirit side to balance that off, come back or not. So it's always a free choice. But you know, it's sort of a moral imperative. If you finish a life where you've created you're a real bad dude, created a bunch of bad karma, morally, you're going to say to yourself, well, I need to go back and try to clean the slate, try to do something really good to balance off my karma. But you're not compelled to. It's just really a moral imperative. But most souls will do that. And so it's really a way of, you know, you could just keep track of what you did versus the bad things versus the good things. And hopefully for most people, they want to say, when I finish with the Earth School, I want to make sure that my karma is completely balanced, or that I have a positive karma, not a negative one.
Now, why is it that we can't remember our past lives or remember the spirit side of ourselves in our incarnations?
Because it would be too much of a burden to live our lives if we remembered all of our past lives. Remember, imagine if you had 200 past lives. Well, in some of those lives, you might have been a murderer, a thief, an abuser. In other lives, you may have been the victim of that. If you had to carry those memories around in your current life, it would just be overwhelming. Like you couldn't function very properly. So that's why we don't remember them. And we don't remember where we came from or what's in our life plan, because that would make life too easy. So as Albert says, if you remembered what was in your life plan, it would be like the teacher giving her students the questions and answers to a final exam before the exam. Like what's the point of studying or writing it, you know? So it's designed deliberately to be very tough school. You chose to come here. You don't remember why, same as me, but it's a very tough school and we're struggling through this tough school. And that's why we don't remember our past lives or where we came from.
I've said this on the show before in regards to the concepts of good and evil, the good or bad. And that, you know, that is a concept that is really earthbound, where things are good or things are bad, because it's all perspective. And I always use the example of a car accident. It could be the worst thing that happened to you if you get into a car accident, but to the mechanic, it's a great day. The accident itself is neither charged good nor bad. It is all about the perspective of the thing. So if a tree falls on you while you're walking in the forest and kills you, your perspective is that was horrible. The tree killed me. But in the tree's perspective, it's like, I've just fell. Like the thing is the thing is, did Albert talk a little bit about good and evil, good and bad, and what that means in this incarnation?
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
Well, there's no, yeah, he did. He said there's no good or evil in an absolute sense. There's no sort of standard that the source or God sets that you have to try to comply with. So it's really a matter of, it is what it is. And it's good in the sense of if it's doing what your soul wants you to do, and bad if it's not what your soul wants to do. And aside from that, there is no good or evil. It's just, are you on the right track or not? And it doesn't really matter, because if you do nothing but evil in this life, there's no difference when you go back to the spirit side. It's just like you will look at your life and say, you know, when you go back, everyone has a life review. They review their life in great detail, and they look to see, okay, these are the good things I did, these are the bad things I did. And it's a learning tool to say, okay, how can I avoid in my next life the bad things that I did, so that when you plan your next life, you can go ahead and try to do better. And so there's no absolute right or wrong or good or evil. It's just how it relates to what our soul wants to do. But even if our soul goes way off course, it's not something that, you know, when you get back to spirit side, there's nobody who says you were a really bad dude there or you're off. There's nothing but unconditional love, so that everyone understands that some people go off course, some people go way off course. You know, so if you're a serial killer, and I know a lot of people really object to this, but if you're a serial killer, you go back to the spirit side the same as Mother Teresa did, which for a lot of people think, well, that's wrong, because if you're a bad dude here, you should suffer punishment in the afterlife. That's just a human perspective. It doesn't happen.
Right. And again, we go back to the play. I mean, if you go back to the play, if you're Darth Vader or Hannibal Lecter in a movie, that's the part you're playing in this movie, period. But at the end of the day, the actors take off the costumes and they go back home, and that the actors being the souls going back home is the spirit side. And it's not taken at the same level or the same perspective as we take it in this world today. So in many ways, what you're saying is that, you know, even if you've decided, like, in this lifetime, I'm going to cause pain to other people, this is my, you know, I'm going to abuse my family, I'm going to abuse my spouse, I'm going to, you know, steal money from people, I'm going to, as long as that was the plan laid out, that then I'm on path. But when I go back to the spirit side, you will do a life review and you will feel the pain that these other people and other souls, all your actions, you will feel the pain. From my understanding, from talking to many people about this subject, is in the life review, you feel everything, good and bad, that you did here. So even if it's not a perspective of good or bad, you still have either, did I cause pain or did I cause love? So if you're helping someone, that has a different charge than if you're hurting someone. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And just to further your comment on the life review, one of the unique aspects is that you get to hear the thoughts and feel the emotions of the people you interacted with. So that if you said something cruel to a coworker one day, you can feel their hurt and their anxiety and wondering why were you cruel to them? The other hand, if you did something, you helped a senior citizen across the crosswalk, you'll be able to feel their love and gratitude for your helping, you know, your aid. So you get both the good and the bad. And it's really a learning tool, because quite often we go through life hurting other people unintentionally, not realizing that we have done it. And then when you do your life review, you can say, okay, next time I'm going to have to be careful with my words and my actions, because I may be hurting people when I don't intend to. Now, sometimes you do intend to do it. And one of the things is, you know, if for example, if you want to be someone who's, for whatever reason, wants to suffer being beaten to death, you find somebody in your soul group who will fulfill the role of your perpetrator. And so that person will say, okay, you want to experience this? I will go and incarnate and I'll be the one who beat you to death, okay? And so those things they happen all the time. Now, some of the bad things that happen on our planet aren't planned. Some are, some aren't. Some are just a matter of a soul who didn't intend to be bad, but let their negative emotions get out of control. So that happens also. So that's the other way that evil is caused. But again, it's sort of like, get back to the spirit side, it's like, okay, cool, lost control of my emotions. I wished I hadn't done it, but I would go back and try to do better the next time.
It's kind of like stories of, you know, a dictator who has all these amazing gifts of being able to speak and gather people and motivate people in a good way. These are all very positive attributes. But if you go down the wrong path, you become a dictator and you're hurting people and it's all about ego and all this kind of, so you can't go. But those gifts were given to that soul in this incarnation. So you can look at throughout history, you know, Genghis Khan, he had gifts. he was able to do things that other people weren't able to do, but he obviously decided to go the different way. And you could look through Rome and look through Egypt's history. Look at all these. They had these kind of gifts that you would associate with someone trying to help people. Jesus had these same gifts as many dictators did, as far as being able to speak, to motivate crowds, to change people's perspective on things. Those could go either both ways. So Jesus being the positive way, or Buddha, or even someone like Yogananda, or you know, gurus of more current years, or then you talk people like Genghis Khan, Alexander the Great, Julius Caesar, these kind of people. But they both had similar sets of gifts. Is that a fair thing to say?
Yeah, it's a fair statement. And then for some reason, the dictators, the evil people, they just got off track and they let their negative emotions, fear, anger, hate, sort of get control of their lives, whereas people like Jesus and Buddha did not. And so it's just a matter of, you can't really tell. The interesting, I had, in one of my encounters in the spirit side with Albert, I had a conversation with a soul who was Hitler. Mm. And Hitler said he had planned to be a politician. He had planned to have the gifts, the oratory, and so on. He hadn't planned to be a monster, but he had planned to be a politician. So when he got here, then his negative emotions just got the better of him, and he became a horrible dictator who killed a lot of people. So that wasn't planned. He had planned to be a politician, but not to that extent. So those things happen. And I don't know about Genghis Khan and the other people, but I imagine similar things happen. Thank God we had people like Jesus and Buddha and some of the other great people who had those temptations, but resisted it and made a very positive effect on our planet.
Isn't it interesting though? And I've seen this, someone said this the other day, and you start looking throughout history, it's very true. When there's a great negative or evil, quote unquote evil or bad thing that happens in the world stage, a good balancing point comes up. So if there is a great evil, like let's say the Nazis or Hitler, then the allies show up. The allies weren't there prior to Hitler coming up. And there's always a balancing act. So when there's great evil, great good. And when there's great good, great evil. And when that evil goes down, the good goes. It's like a really balancing force. And if you look throughout history, that happens. Because if not, then something would overtake 100%. So that's why we're not in, that's why you and I are not speaking German right now.
Yes, exactly. But sometimes that doesn't always work. Generally, it does. Right. There's been some civilizations in our history, human ones, like Atlantis and Lemuria, where it didn't, the good did not conquer whatever the evil was that caused them to crash and burn. And so they disappeared. And so right now we're in a similar position. We have great technology. We have weapons of mass destruction. We could destroy all the life on our planet if we unleash them. And so we have to be really careful to move ahead and try to follow the light as opposed to the darkness. And so It's balancing now. Is the good going to triumph over the evil, or the other way around? We don't know. We have to just strive, try to make sure the good does triumph.
And I mean, I do think that there is a change happening in our society. Even in my lifetime, there's been so much acceptance of ideas and concepts. I mean, you and I talk about meditation. That was insane in the 70s to even think about. You were a hippie, crazy person. And now CEOs do meditation, yoga and karma and these kind of spiritual ideas. There seems to be more acceptance, and people are looking for more of this information to try to make changes in their lives. Where in the early 1900s, you know, even in the 50s, there just was, it was such an, you were on the outskirts, you were on the fringe of society with these ideas. And now, I mean, it is much more accepted. So I do think that there is hope that we are moving in the right direction where we weren't before. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's been a lot of progress made in the last 30, 40 years, whatever. Albert had told me that if I had written my books 30 years ago, well, first of all, I wouldn't have written them. Second thing, nobody would have read them if I had, you know, because people weren't ready for it back then.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
Now there's a lot of people who are more spiritually enlightened. They're more attuned to the spiritual world, to trying to do good, to increase their vibrations through meditation and other things. And so it is getting a lot better, but we're not there yet. We have to keep on pushing. We have to do. And one of the things that there's so much more enlightenment is that the spirits on the spirit side are sending more advanced souls to incarnate to try to help humanity become more enlightened. They're sending a lot of messages through messengers, like people who have radio shows like you, people who write books. They're getting the message out, and more people are paying attention to it. They're not thinking it's a fringe of crazy people. So it's becoming more mainstream. But there's still a lot of people who are in the dark, who don't realize what they should be doing or how they should be trying to improve our planet. That's unfortunate. But the more people that are enlightened like you and your listeners, I'm sure, the better off we'll be. We just have to keep up the pressure.
You know, it's fascinating that, you know, there was this long period of time, what we call the Dark Ages, where there was pretty much no movement. There was an age of ignorance, if you will. And within the last 120 years, the amount of advancements that our society has had is unheard of in the history of written history that we have access to. And that goes as well for spirituality. I mean, these ideas, I remember when, reading Yogananda, and when he showed up in the 20s as an Indian guru talking about meditation and yoga. Can you imagine in the 20s, the 30s? Like it blows the mind, but he's the one that brought a lot of those ideas over and started to shape the West in that way. Those ideas have been in the East forever, but in the West, it's just fascinating. You start thinking about, even in my lifetime, I remember, I'm old, but I'm not that old. I'm older than, I'm relatively, you know, but even in my lifetime, I was born in the 70s. I remember when there was no remotes. I was the remote control for my grandfather. He'd be like, get up, turn. And I had four channels. It was three channels. And then the two UFH channels. And that was the end of it. I remember all of these things that took for like telephone, the rotary phone, and so much, even in for all the young people listening, I remember a time without internet, without cell phones, without all of this happened so quickly, and it's going so much faster. I mean, the power that this little thing here has is more powerful than the computers that sent us to the moon. So it's fascinating. So to your idea of that souls are being incarnated, more advanced souls are coming back to us incarnating now, you can see it. You can see that there's ideas and things flowing in ways that they haven't. And it seems to be going faster than ever before.
Yes, I totally agree with you. Absolutely. And that's one of the issues that we face, is that we have, our technology is moving much faster than our spiritual and emotional intelligence. So we're lagging behind on those two things. And the danger is, of course, the technology gets so advanced that somebody pushes a button or pulls a trigger and it's all over. So we have to make sure that, do our best to make sure that doesn't happen. And we have to try to bring everybody along in terms of spiritual and emotional intelligence, and try to bring people along to get to the same level as our technology. And it can happen. There are other human civilizations in our galaxy that have conquered that. They've managed to get over that hump, and they have beautiful societies that, where their negative emotions are basically non-existent, and everyone sort of loves one another. And so if they can do it, we can do it too. We just have to work really hard at it.
So if there are places like this that exist in the universe, what is the purpose of those places? If everything is happy-go-lucky, if you will, in those kind of societies, what is there to learn, as opposed to us that we're, as you said, a very tough school. You know, this is a very tough university here on Earth. What would you learn from a society that there are very minimal negative emotions and everything seems to be a lot more happy-go-lucky?
Well, you don't learn as much as on planet Earth, that's for sure. But there are always things to learn. And sometimes the souls who incarnate there are sort of like, I've had a couple of really rough lives on Earth. I'm going to take a little breather, going to one of these planets, and then I'm going to come back. You know, so it's there's various reasons. You can always learn something. And some souls are just too timid to jump into the Earth school because it's really a tough school. You know, Albert always says to me, tell everybody you meet to pat themselves on the back for being so courageous as to coming here. But some souls just aren't ready for it, or they've had too many bad lives and they say, I'm going to take a break. So you're not going to learn as much there, but you still learn some things. And then, of course, when you come back, you can then decide, okay, now I'm ready for planet Earth. So
now, do you still speak to Albert?
Yes.
Is he still physically incarnated?
No. He manifested as the homeless man for the first three times we met. And then he was just a voice in my head. We communicated by telepathy. So, you know, and then he came back into my life in astral form. And we did the astral trips. But he's still on the spirit side, has not incarnated. I'm one of his messengers. He has many. He won't tell me who the other ones are. But his mission is to blast out the message of love, compassion, forgiveness, and try to help humanity move up the ladder of spiritual enlightenment. That's his mission. And I'm just one of his messengers.
Now, you spoke about astral projection. Can you talk about a little bit about astral projection and what that is and what did you do with it?
Well, it's a matter of traveling on the astral plane. The astral plane is the very high vibration level. And so how it happened to me was that after I finished the first manuscript, he came into my life in a different way. I woke up one night and I saw this ghost-like figure standing in the doorway of my bedroom. When he moved closer, I could see it was Albert, but he was in astral form. So astral form, sort of semi-transparent, but I could make out who he was. And then he just grabbed my astral body and pulled it out of my physical body and said, come on, let's go. And we went off to the spirit side and other places. So it's virtually instantaneous travel. You can walk through walls and ceilings or whatever on the physical plane like they're not there. So it's really amazing. I mean, the good thing about astral travel is you don't have to go through security checkpoints or boarding gates or buy a ticket or sit on a cramped plane or anything. It's really quite amazing. But the interesting thing, Alex, is that every one of us astral travels at night when we sleep. Mm. We don't remember it, but when your body sleeps, your soul leaves your body temporarily, goes to the spirit side to huddle with your spirit guides, or you can go anywhere you want. In the morning, you're back into your body. You're not allowed to remember that, but everyone does astral travel. So a lot of people are amazed at that, but that is a fact.
So what are dreams then? Are those memories of our astral projections?
Sometimes they're memories of the astral projections. Sometimes they are just messages being given to you by your guides. So sometimes they'll give you messages, communications through your dreams. Sometimes the dreams are, you remember glimpses of your astral travels. So it's a combination. It could be either or.
Why is it then when messages do come through dreams that they have to be so coded? Can't they just be a little bit more straightforward about it? It's like, it's not really about the rabbit that's running away from the wolf. Really, you should just avoid this business deal. Why can't they just say that, sir?
Well, that would be nice, wouldn't it? It'd be really nice if they would give us that step-by-step guide, but then it would be too easy. You know, like I said before, you don't remember what you had planned because it would be too easy. This is a tough school, so they're not going to take that away from you. So your dreams are coded. The messages you get from your spirit guides are very subtle. They're not direct. I mean, it'd be nice if everyone could talk to their guide like I do to Albert and just say, okay, what should I do today? What should I do next week? What job should I take? What city should I live in? You know, that kind of thing. But they're not going to tell you that. In fact, Albert doesn't give me personal advice. He won't give me personal advice. He gives me revelations that are applicable basically to everyone. But not specifically to me. So I don't get personal advice. I mean, I've asked him many times for the winning lottery number, but he won't give it to me.
Not so much. With That'd be nice though, right? It would be nice.
It'd be nice.
Just one thing you don't have to worry about, money. That'd be great. Just, you know, but you know, that's a very interesting thing. So many people are always so, especially in the West, are so caught up with money and wanting to make sure that they have millions and billions and whatever you want. But if you look at your lives, if you have a roof over your head, you have money in the, some money in the bank, some food on the table, you know, what more do you want is the question. Like, if your needs are met and you've never been hungry, you've never been thrown out on the street, you have a car that runs, you have your needs met.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
Why is it that we are constantly looking for more, wanting more money? Most people, if you give them $1 billion, would not absolutely know not what to do with it. They just wouldn't. I had the pleasure of years ago working on a documentary series about lottery winners. And it was fascinating. I met these people and I went to their homes. It was fascinating to watch how some completely ignored the fact that they even won. Like literally, like nothing changed. Like I asked this one guy, he's like, why don't you quit your job? He's like, oh, I don't want to lose my pension. Like, you've got 10 million in the bank. What's wrong with you? Like, but in his mind, he just, which I think is one gone off the deep end on one way. And then there was the other side of the spectrum where it was a couple that lived in a trailer park who had never had any money in their life. And all they did was spend and spend stuff and get stuff and travel. And at the end of the day, they go, we only have two friends, our accountant and our lawyer. Oh, and our priest. Those are the only three people we speak to. I'm like, wow, man. Yeah. Wow. See, money isn't everything, but isn't it fascinating though?
Yeah. And it's really our egos, our human minds who are driving that agenda to get acquire wealth and material goods. That's not what our souls want. But we don't get to tap into know what our souls want directly. We have to try to listen to the messages from our guides and try to decipher what we should be doing. But I mean, basically, if you have food on the table and a roof over your head and that sort of thing, you really shouldn't need anymore. You really should be out there trying to do good, spread love, forgiveness, compassion to other people and make our planet a better place. I mean, that's what our souls really want us to do, and not accumulate wealth, because that, when you leave this life, you don't take any of that with you. So you go to the same place as Jeff Bezos will when he dies. You're all going to end up back in the same place. So it all stays here. And so it's a bit of a fruitless exercise in a lot of ways, but it's very strong desire that we have, and it's hard to shake it.
Unless you're doing good with it too, because there's a lot of philanthropists and people who've acquired lots of, you know, resources and revenue and money, things like that, but decide to do good with it and not just accumulate like a dragon hoarding a gold in a cave somewhere. They're actually doing good with it in the world and helping people, opening up organizations, spreading the message, all that kind of stuff. So money, again, is just like the concept of good and evil. In itself, it has no charge. It's what you do with it and how and what kind of charge we give it. Is what it is, because there's people. I mean, I wish I had $1 billion so I can create organizations and help people and spread the word. And because for me, I'd be like, at a certain point, how many rooms do you need in the house? Seriously, like how many rooms do you need? How many cars do you need? You know, after you've traveled, let's say you take a year and travel the world in the first class. Okay, now what? Are you going to do that for the next 20 years? Like what? At a certain point, you run up to the end. You're like, and then some people don't ever run up to the end. They need 110 rooms in the house because it's almost a sickness at that point.
Yeah, I can remember when Albert first told me that I got to choose my life on Earth. And I said to him, well, if I could do that, why didn't I choose to be Prince Charles? You know, because he's got 150 servants. Even has a servant who squeezes the toothpaste onto his toothbrush. And I said, Albert, how come I didn't choose that? He said, well, we thought that you'd want to have the experience of squeezing your own toothpaste.
I mean, I couldn't even comprehend that. I mean, you know, in movies you see things like that, you know, and the princes and the extravagances of their life. But I can't even imagine. God, even when I travel or I do speaking engagements and people kind of gush over me and they're like, can you have this? I'm like, guy, just give me a place to sit down. I'm good. Dude, what do you want? A bottle of water would be fine. I don't need, what kind of water do you want? I'm like, clean water. I don't really need a whole lot, guys. You know, it's really, and I come from the world of Hollywood. So can you only imagine what I've seen over the course of my career and working with, there's a couple egos in Hollywood, not many, but there's a couple of out of control egos that I've dealt with over the years. Yeah. At least two that I can remember off the top of my head, but it truly is fascinating. I love the quote that Jim Carrey said, the famous comedian actor who said, I wish everybody would get everything they ever wanted so they would understand it doesn't mean anything. Mm-hmm. And because he is in a unique position to literally have gotten everything he wanted. One of the most famous people in the world. Millions of dollars, beautiful women, physical things everywhere. And yet he felt empty. And he's like, oh, no, this is not what it's all about. It's a very unique place to be. There's not many souls that get to do what he did and find the other side of that. And it's so funny, Tom, the director of his movies of Ace Ventura and Bruce Almighty, he had the same revelation. He was lived in this mansion in Pasadena. And he decided, he's like, this is not what my life should be about. And he moved into a trailer and now has a bike and travels only on a bicycle. Things like that. It was fascinating, but those are rare examples. Exactly. Very rare examples.
Yeah, very rare. And it's just human nature to want to accumulate the big houses and the cars and everything else. There are a few exceptions like Jim Carrey who realizes what's really important. Most people don't, but more people are starting to realize that. And that's what's really encouraging is I think we're having more enlightened people. And certainly like you, I mean, you, as I mentioned, 40 years ago, you wouldn't have your radio show, your podcast, probably not. And if you did, no one would listen to it, you know, kind of thing. So people are progressing. And I'm sure you have a huge following. And your message is very well taken, I'm sure.
Can you imagine in the 80s if there was a show like this as a radio show? Only the fringe would listen to it. Very small, very small. Imagine opening up a yoga studio in the 60s. Yeah. Like, can you imagine?
Nobody knew what yoga was then.
Can you imagine if someone opened up or a meditation retreat in the 50s? People would be like, It's the equivalent of us going back to the 1800s and going, this is really what it's all about. You have no idea what this is going to do. You know, everything, all of human knowledge is at your fingertips. Mm-hmm. And they're going to go, what are you talking? it's beyond comprehension. So it does take a little bit of time to catch up, as they say. Really interesting. I wanted to ask you one thing about spirit guides. When we're living our lives and the spirit guides are behind us, behind the scenes, if you will, like the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain, pulling some levers here and there, are they the ones that are opening certain doors for us, bringing certain people into our lives, certain things that are supposed to be guiding us? So in other words, if they like, okay, it's time for Alex to get this job that he's going to meet his wife in. Let's start pushing him in that direction. Even though I had no intention of going towards that job, then opportunities will present. And it's kind of like this big puzzle that just, they keep corralling you until you get into the place. Like, oh, finally. Okay. They met. Okay. Now let nature will take its course there. Okay, great. Now they're married. We need to guide them over here because this in the next 5 years, he's going to be a podcaster. And he has no understanding what podcasting is at this point. So we got to start pushing him. Maybe we'll give him this book. Let's put this book in his Amazon list and make sure it comes across, or a video will show up, or a movie will inspire them, or you'll meet someone who says something that inspires. Is that what they're doing in the behind the scenes?
Yeah, they are. They're in the background trying to guide us to where we should be going. So an example of you're going to meet your spouse. So they're telling you, guiding you to go towards this particular party or whatever, say. They're also guiding or your spouse's guides are guiding her to actually go to the party as well. And all of a sudden you meet, and that's what's intended. So it doesn't always work, but they are sending pressure, intuition, coincidental events to get you to go to the right place where you that where you should be. So meeting your spouse, getting a job, whatever, they're always in the background trying to do it, but it's not very direct. They don't sort of manifest and push you into the thing. They're doing it with subtle messages, but they are working in the background. They want you to follow your life plan as best that you can, particularly important things like finding your spouse or your job or whatever.
Now, with all of the stuff that we've been talking about in regards to our life plans and reincarnating, what waits for us at the end of this tunnel? Is this an ongoing forever scenario, or do we eventually become enlightened like a Jesus or a Buddha or a Yogananda, who become ascended masters, if you will? And they're like, oh, okay, I've learned everything I need to learn at this level. I'm now moving on to the next stage of my evolution. Is that what is basically waiting for all of us?
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
Yeah, it's basically every soul will continue to incarnate on Earth until they feel like they've learned everything they can learn here. They've basically graduated. So, and the decision about whether you graduate or not is up to each soul. So, you know, everyone is trying to get through all the things that they can learn here and then graduate from this Earth school, stay in the spirit side, or go off to another planet, incarnate in another life form. There's so many different choices, but people want to continue with Earth until they've conquered it. And sometimes you can do that in five lives. Sometimes it may take 250 lives. And I remember when I asked Albert, how many lives have I had before? And he said, several hundred. And I said, does that mean I'm an old soul? And he said, no, you're just a slow learner.
I like Albert. Albert has a wicked sense of humor.
He does. Yeah.
No, you're just slow, sir. Anyway. You're just slow, sir. That's all you are. You're on the short bus, sir, is what they're. You're on the short bus of life, sir.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to ask you a few questions I ask all of my guests. What is the definition of living a good life?
Definition of living a good life is to fully embrace love, compassion, and forgiveness. So send nothing but love, forgiveness to other people. People who jump on your toes, you have to forgive them. You try to send love everywhere to all other people around you and lead an exemplary life, like lead by example, by your shining light, a beacon of hope and spirituality. That's the good life as I perceive it. And it's difficult to do that because we all have negative emotions. You know, somebody cuts you off in traffic, the reaction is, I'm going to flip them the bird, you know. You have to sort of stifle that and then say, okay, he's on his own journey. I'm going to send him love and hopefully he doesn't cut me off again kind of thing. So it's a matter of living with love and treating all people. I mean, it's the golden rule that Jesus indicated. Treat other people as you'd like to be treated yourself. Send them love and don't get upset and let your negative emotions get out of control. That's the ideal life on Earth.
Now, what is your mission in this life?
Well, my mission is to spread the revelations that Albert gives to me, to write books about what he shows me in my astral travels, in our dialogue. He wants me to help enlighten other humans by reading my books. That's my mission now, write books, spread his revelations, try to help humanity in that way. And, you know, I mean, that wasn't my mission when I graduated from law school. Then my mission was, or at least I thought my mission was, to accumulate wealth, get a big house, two cars in the garage and all that sort of thing. But then after I met him, I realized what my real mission was. But my law practice was just a setup for my second career, which is spreading because I wouldn't be able to do that if I didn't have, you know, had established myself. So now I can do the real mission in my life, which I didn't realize until I met him. Now it is to spread his word, spread the light.
Isn't it fascinating that I started my career off as a filmmaker? And I still am a filmmaker and a writer, but then I turned into a podcaster 7 years ago and an author and speaker, and it's become almost a second life, essentially. And the old life still have stuff that I bring into it, but it's fascinating how that all works out. If someone would have told you at the beginning of your law career, I'm like, this is what's going to happen. You're going to meet this guy and then your life is going to, you would have said you're insane. And if I would have been told, no, you're going to be a podcaster, and I'm going to be like, what?
Yeah, exactly.
The people, I always tell people, like, you know where the money is? Podcasting. That's where the money is. So it's definitely a labor of love doing this. But it's really fascinating. Your journey has been very fascinating to listen to, Garrett, and I really appreciate you. Where can people find out more about you, your work, and your books?
On my website, which is garnetschulhauser.com. That's not easy to remember, but if you Google any of my book titles, like Dancing on the Stamp, and get to my website, there's the information about all my books, all my social media links. All of my radio show recordings are posted on my website and on my YouTube channel. So I've done like 178 radio talk shows so far. And so the recordings are all there. And there's buy links there. You can just click on the amazon.com and you get to the page where all my books are. So if they want to buy my books, very easy.
My friend, thank you so much for coming on the show. I appreciate you and the work that you're doing and spreading love and understanding and hopefully some bliss into this world. So again, thank you so much for coming on the show. And I appreciate you, my friend.
Thank you for having me. I've been delighted to be here.
I want to thank Garnett for coming on the show and sharing his journey with all of us. If you want to get links to anything we spoke about in this episode, including how to reach out to him or purchase his books, head over to the show notes at nextlevelsoul.com/103. And if you've only been listening to this over podcast and you want to watch these amazing conversations, please subscribe to our YouTube channel at nextlevelsoul.com/YouTube. Thank you so much for listening. And remember, trust the journey. It is here to teach you. I'll talk to you soon.